or to participate in the program, we will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Jean-Pierre Bemba, the former Democratic Republic of Congo vice president, is planning to run for president in the December election. Bemba's ICC war crimes conviction was recently overturned on appeal. Politics in the DRC on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
I just have to say congratulations.
This is Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the sunny side of sports. We've got a plethora of prime sports programming on the show for you today on the first Tuesday of August. Iron Mike Mbonye leads things off with some notes on African sports, including a look at how some of the female athletes from Nigeria performed at the recently wrapped African Senior Athletics Championships in Asaba. Mike also has an interview with the newly named head coach of the Tanzanian national soccer team, Emmanuel Amunike, who as a player represented Nigeria in the 2004 World Cup. We'll then transition to a conversation with AJ Perez, a sports reporter for USA Today here in the United States, to talk about some of the hot water American athletes have been getting into in connection with old posts on social media services like Twitter. Following AJ, our number three batter will be my VOA colleague Gwen Uten, who has a look at the gay games in Paris. Then we'll join cleanup hitter Prince Nesta, who has a sporty Nesta nugget related to English soccer, and we'll chat about One Casino's predictions for the upcoming NBA season. First up, Iron Mike, who has some analysis with Olympic medalist and African champion Falilat Ogunkoya Omotayo.
I just have to say congratulations to Governor Okowa. I think he has done very well for allowing Africa to come into Asaba and Nigeria as a whole. I think it was a very beautiful event, and I'm happy that the crowd, people in Asaba, they supported the competition and they all came out to watch. And when you have a competition that have a full crowd, you can't beat it.
And how did you see the events, especially those areas, as it affects the women event?
I think women still perform very well in Nigeria. You know, we won the long jump, 100 meters hurdles, you know, 4x1, 4x4. I think Nigeria, you know, and we came second in the other races. I think we have done very well. 400 hurdles, you know, we won female. So I think Nigeria, you know, we are blessed. We just have to continue to support them and give them a bat at the, you know, a pad at the back.
At the end of the day, ma, Nigeria placed third and won 9 gold medals. Out of the 9 gold medals, women won 8. What's your reaction to this?
Yeah, and I said before, it's women that's always, you know, we have been doing very well. And I just pray that Nigeria as a whole, we support our athletes. Even when they're not doing very well, we must give them support. And when they did very well, we must still give them support. And we have to plead to all the Nigeria. It's only sport that united all of us. We should work together and make Nigeria proud and make all the athletes proud that they are representing Nigeria.
What's your take on the future of athletics in Nigeria?
They have to continue to work hard, make sure that we make ourselves and Nigeria proud and give support. When you work hard, there's always you earn something. And those people that won the gold, silver, bronze, and even the Pacific one, they did very well.
Mike also caught up with former Nigerian national soccer team member Emmanuel Amunike, who was recently named the head coach for the national team from Tanzania. Tanzania has never qualified for the World Cup. Take it away, Mike.
Well, I'm grateful to the Tanzanian people. I'm grateful to the president of the Tanzanian Football Federation. I'm grateful to the GS, the Tanzanian Football Federation, for giving me the opportunity to come and coach their team. Of course, we are all happy from both sides. We all happy times of the ideas that they have. It's a kind of ideas that also I have in mind. So, and hopefully, I think collectively here, we'll be able to see and put our part to see how Tanzanian football can grow and develop. I think that's the most important thing.
From your coaching careers and since you started coaching, do you see any potential in Tanzanian football, growing it, making it move forward?
Well, football, we all know, every country has its own tradition. But of course, African football, not only Tanzanian football, there is need in terms of developing our young players. And that is exactly and the directions that the Tanzanian people and the FAs have taken to develop their football. Well, no human being is short of knowledge. And no human being that came into this world was born with experience. I think it's through the challenges, through the process of what you are doing, you acquire the experience, you acquire the knowledge, you're able to develop yourself, you're able to progress from one stage to another stage. But of course, they have good players. They have some of their players playing in Europe. They have some of their players playing in the local league. We'll walk towards to that. We shouldn't forget also, Nigerian football, there was a time it was in the same process. Then came Westerhof, begins to give the local players opportunity, and with the experience of the foreign players among the team, Nigerian team was able to excel and is being recognized today. I think Tanzania, in the nearest future also, people will begin to recognize their, them as one of the potential in Africa.
When do you intend to start work, especially with the first African qualifier you have at hand?
Like I said to you, I said the work has already started because football is not just about training. It deals with other logistics, the planning, the organization. So I think we are doing that and hopefully we start preparing our mind and knowing what kind of teams we have and looking at our strength and looking at our weakness so that we can improve on that.
You have your first AFCON qualifier when, sir?
That's September 8th, I think. September 7th, 8th. Against Uganda.
Any message to the people of Tanzania regarding the new appointment you have?
Well, the message is clear. I really thank them and I appreciate. And I know that by God's grace, collectively, if we all work hard and remain disciplined and focused, we can collectively, you know, move Tanzanian football forward. And I think that is the hope and the dreams we all are dreaming. And what we have to do now is collectively to do our part as a human being and then leave the rest to God.
That's Iron Mike Mbonye, who caught up with former Nigerian international Emmanuel Amunike, who was just named the head coach of the Tanzanian national team. I'm Dan Friedel, filling in for Sonny this week, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Next up, we're joined for a conversation with USA Today sports reporter AJ Perez. If you remember, last week I talked about some of the trouble that young American baseball players have found themselves in recently based on past messages in their social media histories. AJ joined me earlier to talk about the fallout. AJ, I wanted to ask you to give our listeners in Africa a little bit of background on how athletes who are currently making a name for themselves in professional sports, how their past social media posts are coming back to haunt them. We've recently seen in the U.S. some Major League Baseball players who have had big games or been playing in notable games that reporters have gone back into their past Twitter feeds and seen some things that they wrote in their late teens and early 20s when they maybe didn't expect to have such a public profile. AJ, why don't you let us know, why don't you let our listeners know where things stand as far as athletes and their social media use in the United States these days?
Yeah, this has been happening in the last couple of years, especially in football, in American football, and other sports. When guys are drafted, a lot of Twitter users, a lot of times anonymous, will alert reporters with some maybe very insensitive, racially insensitive, or homophobic tweets, and they'll message a reporter or somebody else to get it out there, or tag them in a Twitter post, tag, you know, ESPN, USA Today. A lot of it starts just by one person going back through a timeline. In baseball, there's been three players so far over the last month whose tweets from 5, 6, 7 years ago were pretty insensitive, you know, they've all apologized and said that that's not who they are now. A lot of them blamed it on the age, except Trey Turner. He actually didn't say his age was an explanation for the tweets that came out.
So as we mentioned on the show last week here on the Sunny Side of Sports, Trey Turner, a middle 20s shortstop for the Washington Nationals, has a pretty public profile these days. But when he made his tweets that were insulting toward gay people and African-Americans and other groups that are marginalized in American society, he was actually a college student. And he probably had the most heartfelt response during a press conference. What would you tell athletes who are on the verge of making it into the major sports leagues, either in the U.S. or abroad, who might have some material in their past that wouldn't reflect very well on them today?
Yeah, this is something that usually – at least if the bigger agencies who assign these players, who represent these players, a lot of them just will themselves, the agents, go through and look through the timeline. But the easiest thing to do, and I wrote about this almost a month ago now, there's services on Twitter, and it's not to excuse what they wrote, you know, what you wrote 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago or yesterday even. If it's something that's insensitive and then get you in trouble at work, there could still be images of it. But, you know, something that's happened so long ago, there's services you can, some free, some paid on. I wrote about Tweet Delete, where you could actually just go through and just wipe out years worth of tweets within minutes. You can do that yourself on Twitter. You can actually go down, download your whole entire Twitter history. It'll come down in a spreadsheet, and you can go through one by one or do search terms. And then go back and manually and delete them. But that's something that, you know, a lot of even the young athletes that I talk to, that, you know, they're cognizant of it. And even one of them told me the other day, I was like, I don't know what, I got my Twitter account when I was in seventh grade. I said, they have it that young, but, you know, several years later. And, you know, I don't know what I was tweeting back then. So this has put a lot of people on alert. And they should have been on alert. We had this happen at the NFL draft. It's happened at the Final Four over the last year. So it's like this should not have been news to either agents, the teams, or the players who maybe just forgot how bad their tweets were when they were younger.
We're joined by AJ Perez from USA Today Sports here on the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm Dan Friedel filling in for Sonny Young this week. We're talking about social media posts from the past coming back to haunt athletes once they make it onto the big stage. AJ, I'm curious to hear from you as a reporter who is on the investigative side, whether you think that athletes realizing that their behavior on social media in past years might come back to haunt them could actually make it harder for people that do the job that you do to get the information that you're trying to get out to your readers.
Yeah, it's true. I've not been one of them. I've written about Twitter and these Twitter controversies. I really don't actively look through timelines. I think a lot of this stuff, it surprises me how often this still comes up. I just almost assume by this point that there's nothing, you know, that far back. It's going to be harmful to somebody. But you know, maybe I should start going through it. But you know, once we get alerted by it, and then you go through it, I think Twitter, social media in general is great for the athletes. It's great for celebrities. They get their brand out there. They can kind of tell the fans directly what they want to know. It's kind of bad for journalists in some respects. You know, since they think they can communicate with the fans more directly. And a lot of them do. A lot of them have accounts that they barely update. But a lot of athletes actually do on daily or a couple times a day, you know, kind of give the fans a look inside their world. This could lead to them becoming more guarded and maybe wary overall and make our jobs harder. I mean, a lot of athletes don't like us already. They may be getting on us since this is we are reporting what these tweets say, even though most of the time, as far as I can tell, we were not digging through timelines. We're just kind of alerted about this stuff.
So last question for you, AJ. Thanks again for joining us here on the Sunny Side of Sports. My final question for you is whether this commentary that people are finding from these athletes who now have a very public profile, but when they made these posts, they were teenagers or in their early 20s. And, you know, sure, they had this idea that they might become professional athletes and all-stars and, you know, number one players in their position on their respective teams and have this high profile. But do you think that the social media post of a 17-year-old when that person is in their middle 20s, should that be taken with the same weight as a post that might be made by somebody who's a fully formed adult?
No. I've had friends who are very, one political mindset and very, maybe more than political. We're one way in high school and they've totally changed. People can change. People leave their comfort zones and they go off to college. Even in college, you're in a bubble there. Then you get into the real world. You know, a lot of viewpoints are instilled at a young age by parents and your close family. And that's good or bad in some cases. But once people get out and meet people who are different ethnicities, maybe meet people who are LGBT, that usually breaks down a lot of things for someone who's and becoming more open-minded. And that, I think people can grow, and I think that a lot of them saying, "Well, this was me so and so years ago," that's kind of a cop out, but it also could be true.
Thanks for that, AJ. AJ Perez from USA Today Sports. Thanks for joining us on the Sunny Side of Sports.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
That's AJ Perez from USA Today. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Now, my colleague Gwen Uten has this story on the Gay Games, which kicked off over the weekend in Paris. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Dan. The event has been dubbed the world's largest sporting and cultural event open to all. The opening ceremony of the 10th Gay Games was held over the weekend in Paris, France. And the competitions are underway for thousands of athletes representing 91 countries around the world. The Games made its debut in 1982 in San Francisco, California, a U.S. city largely regarded as the epicenter of the gay rights movement. Volleyball player Adam Kiem is from San Francisco and says playing among athletes from countries where homosexuality is not tolerated makes these games an important platform.
Coming to something like this, there's all sorts of people from around the world, and they live in places, even in the United States, they live in places where it's not okay to be gay still. And there's a lot of danger and safety issues, and things like this are important to show other people that we're just like them. We're just people too, and we play sports and we have fun, and hopefully this will be a good experience for those people as well, and maybe change some perspectives.
Among the competitors are athletes from the Middle East and African countries where gays are banned, arrested, or sentenced to death. 58 athletes are representing Russia, which passed a law in 2013 that bans propaganda for non-traditional sexual relations. Host nation France itself experienced a reported 15% surge in anti-gay attacks between 2016 and 2017. However, the Gay Games have received broad support from the French government and its corporate sponsors. Competitions continue until August 12th. The next Games will take place in Hong Kong in 2022. The Gay Games are held every 4 years to advocate for a diverse society. The Paralympic Games are also held every 4 years with the aim to inspire the world to include all people with disabilities. And that is the dream of one boy from Egypt. He was born with a disability, but he's making waves in the swimming pool. His arms are short from a rare disease, but that's not stopping him from chasing his dream of becoming a Paralympian. Arash Arabasadi reports.
Omar Ahmed is special. His hands are close to his body from a congenital deformity called phocomelia. But this 8-year-old boy from Egypt is making a splash.
I want to be an international champion and to represent Egypt abroad.
Ahmed pursues his love of swimming in spite of his rare deformity. At age 7, he started swimming with a coach who specializes in working with disabled children.
Considering the circumstances Omar found himself in, he is doing very well. However, his will makes him a champion who will represent Egypt.
The athlete says he wants to compete nationally at first, but ultimately as a Paralympian. To reach his lofty goals, he trains 3 times a week with his mother cheering poolside.
He is steadfast and strong. He wants to prove to himself that he can do everything. He progresses, likes his coach, and listens to him.
With his mom's support and his coach's expertise, Ahmed trains his swimming skills and overall endurance, his mom sharing in his dreams.
I would like him to win on a national level, then compete abroad. I want him to compete in the Olympics one day.
Ahmed is an active kid. His time on the grass helps his stamina in the pool. And this boy, determined to overcome a birth defect, says he hopes to compete in an upcoming national swimming championship for disabled athletes like himself. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And that's all from me. Back to you, Dan.
Thank you, Gwen. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. We're joined now in studio by VOA intern Prince Nesta, who has some news on a play by one American sports mogul who's trying to take full control of a football team in London. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings to you too, Dan. Arsenal's majority shareholder Stan Kroenke has made a $778 million offer to secure complete control of the soccer club. The American billionaire, who currently owns 67% of the Premier League giant through his company KSE, claimed that Russian businessman Alisha Usmanov has agreed to sell his 30% stake in the club. Usmanov and Kroenke have both tried unsuccessfully to buy up the other's shares in the past. It remains unclear why the Russian agreed to sell at this point, but he has grown increasingly frustrated at being refused a seat on the club board. If the buyout is completed, it would be the first time in Arsenal's history that the entire club is in the hands of one owner.
That's really interesting, Prince. We'll see what happens. You know, Kroenke is also the owner of a couple of teams here in the U.S.,
yeah,
including the Los Angeles Rams, whose season is getting started in a couple of weeks.
Also the Denver Nuggets. Absolutely. And Dan, I've been wanting to ask. The bookies in Vegas have made some predictions. How are the odds looking like? And do they favor Cleveland this time, especially after the departure of their most dependable player, LeBron James, to the Lakers?
Yeah, Prince, this is interesting. Here we are. It's only the beginning of August, and the bookmakers are putting out their over-under numbers for the total season wins for NBA teams this year. And that means that the bookies put out a number, like, for example, Atlanta Hawks are at the lowest projected win total for the season, 23.5. So you can bet over 23.5 or under 23.5 for total wins for the Atlanta Hawks. And sadly, the Cleveland Cavaliers are only expected to do a little better than the Hawks. Their over-under is 30.5 wins. And in Los Angeles, with LeBron, the over-under for the Lakers is 48.5. You have any other teams you're curious about?
Yeah, Golden State Warriors just signed DeMarcus Cousins. How are the odds looking like for them?
They look, again, like they're going to be the most successful team in the NBA.
Ooh.
Their total is 62.5, so we'll see if they go over or under this year. So that wraps up the August 7th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Workinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Neshwan Kale. and thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel, in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
As part of its efforts to combat HIV, the United States intends to provide up to $90 million to build secondary schools across Malawi and additional funding to provide youth-friendly health services. The U.S. signed a Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, with Malawi in July to expand existing secondary schools and install new secondary schools throughout Malawi. In the MOU, the government of Malawi committed to fund training and salaries for teachers to staff the new schools and maintenance of the new structures. To support the provision of youth-friendly health services near secondary schools, to incorporate comprehensive sex education in the national curriculum to keep young people HIV-free, and to enact a phased-in reduction of secondary school tuition fees. Malawi's Minister of Education, Science and Technology, Bright Msaka, said, "I'm very excited to sign this Memorandum of Understanding on the expansion of secondary education. We are confident that this increased access to education will reduce the transmission of HIV to Malawi's youth and help us break the back of the HIV epidemic." Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Affairs Emmanuel Fabiano concurred, saying this will contribute to the sustainable socioeconomic development of Malawi. Through this commitment, the United States and Malawi will ensure more adolescent girls attend secondary school, which will better keep them HIV-free, said U.S. Ambassador to Malawi Virginia Palmer. Studies have shown that for every year a girl attends secondary school, her risk of contracting HIV throughout her lifetime decreases. The first goal is to increase the number of classrooms in urban secondary schools across Malawi. Malawi's program will demonstrate the critical link between girls' education and public health for the rest of Africa and the world, and provide important benefits for Malawi's development.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Lina Armoudou, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will discuss menopause, a time in women that often indicates the end of fertility. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Jean-Pierre Bemba, the former Democratic Republic of Congo vice president, is planning to run for president in the December election. Bemba's ICC war crimes conviction was recently overturned on appeal. Politics in the DRC on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minutes newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.